We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to another special edition of the Field of 68 podcast, House of Hoosier. No Austin Platt today, but I'm with the Hoosier.com senior beat writer, Mason Williams, and we're going to break down a little bit of Empire Classic coming up and just the first couple of games and a couple of a week stretch for Indiana so far. So, Mason, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks, Ben, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to pinch hit here for Austin.
And I first just want to get your reaction from the first couple of games. You know, it's obviously tough to take too much from the first week of college basketball, but it was not Indiana's best week.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's not the most inspiring start I would say Indiana would have liked to have had coming in and welcoming a couple sub 100 KenPom opponents to Assembly Hall, kind of just trying to get their feet under them a little bit. Indiana's got a lot of new pieces this year, as I'm sure you guys have talked about a lot on the podcast as well. But that's kind of how they look so far. They look like a team that's still trying to gel together, both offensively and defensively. When they get into these stretches of consistent possessions, the things start to go awry a little bit, and they look like kind of just a collection of guys instead of a whole team so far. So, Indiana is – they've come away with two wins, right? And that's the most important part, is that throughout all these struggles, that no matter who the opponent is, they've come in and they've left with a victory. But it's not been as convincing as Indiana's liked, and it's certainly been a lot closer than they would have liked as well.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to get in those situations where you're in close games with teams like Army, a sub-300 KenPom team. But in a way, you have a lot of new guys that are getting some, you know, end-of-game, close-game experience, which is something you didn't really expect early on in the season. I want to jump to one of the biggest concerns people had coming into the season, and one of the biggest concerns that people still have through the first couple of games is just bench depth, and Indiana not getting a whole lot from their bench. How do you fix that?
I think part of it comes with repetition. Again, when you're looking at 10 new faces, six key guys gone from last year's team, having to really kind of fill in production here. There were questions about really what Indiana's starting five was going to look like, really, until the fall kind of started to come around and we started hearing some things about guys like McKenzie and Bacco and stuff. But then he's not the guy on the floor. He's not the freshman on the floor to close games out so far for Indiana this year. It's been Gabe Cupps, who has been a fantastic addition for this Indiana team already. He's acclimated himself to the college game way quicker, way more ahead of schedule than I think a lot of people have anticipated. It'll probably be a guy that's under the radar and a guy to kind of just monitor throughout the entire season. But Indiana still is looking for something. They need more from some of their returners last year, specifically guys like CJ Gunn, Caleb Banks. They brought in a couple of guys, Peyton Sparks and Anthony Walker, who have played some bench minutes as well, but they still, again, look like they're trying to get their legs under them in an Indiana uniform. So I think it's curious. I'll be curious for sure to see where Indiana's bench minutes kind of shake out here as some more of these games start to occur. But, you know, you look, and Woodson has always talked about wanting to build his team to where there isn't a drop-off between the first unit and the second unit. That's how every team obviously wants to construct their team. Everybody says preseason that they want to run 9-10 guys on the floor to say, or be able to run 9 or 10 guys on the floor and feel comfortable about it. But I'm not sure if Indiana can say that so far this year, because they've had some troubles with their starting five as well, not getting the production out of that as well. So the closing lineup through two games has been different than the starting lineup. And I think Indiana is still trying to find the right mesh of guys to have on the floor for extended periods of time.
You kind of touched on what Austin and I talked about on our season preview, and something we differed on is we get in the middle of the season, you're playing Big Ten play in January and February. How deep does this lineup go? You know, Woodson talks about he wants to go 9 or 10 deep, but sometimes that's just not as realistic. He has been able to do it with the last couple of teams, but realistically, as they stand right now, how many deep do you think they go?
Well, it's an interesting case to look at, because even when you look at last year's Big Ten tournament run and into the NCAA tournament, Indiana was very heavily relying on their starting five and didn't have much bench depth at all. They're running only 6 or 7 guys in a rotation with valuable minutes. I think it'll be interesting to see how a guy like Cups, who has got off to this fast start for Indiana this year, how he kind of adjusts to playing a more physical brand of basketball in conference, and kind of what his minutes share looks like going forward. I'll be really impressed if he maintains that same level of play. But Indiana's going to need more from the bench unit in order to run 9 or 10, because I don't think this is a team right now that is going to be able to run 9 or 10 guys. They'll probably be scrounging around for 8 guys with quality minutes here, where you can, you know, have some front court rotation, have a guy or two in the back court at all times off the bench that can kind of spare your guys some minutes. And then it all comes down to that wing position too, because Indiana hasn't got what they've wanted out of McKenzie and Bacco yet either. So I would say right now, if I had to put a number on it, I'd probably shoot for 7 or 8 really solid guys that Indiana should be looking for. And if you get contributions from a 9th, a 10th guy, that's going to be a big bonus, obviously, but that's not something I would count on for this team right now, game in and game out.
You touched on Cups, and he's impressed me so far, especially back-to-back games. It's his first two real games of his college career, and he's hit big shots in those moments as a freshman, which even against lesser opponents, those are just kind of moments that you can't really replicate at any other level until you get to the college level. And something Indiana fans were a little mad at me earlier. I was selling him before the season, but I just wanted to ask, what kind of does he bring to the table when you get into Big Ten play? He wasn't a huge recruit coming out of high school. He wasn't top 100, you know, nowhere near Mbaku. He was around the Ja'Kai Newton level. Yeah. But I think Indiana fans are getting more than expected from him.
Well, I think he's quickly established himself as a fan favorite already, just purely for his defensive energy. He's picking up 94 feet. He's deflecting passes out of bounds. He's diving on the floor for balls. And offensively, his impact may not show up in the form of 8 to 10 points a game or 4 assists a game or something like that. But you can't tell the story of Indiana's 2 wins so far without talking about Gabe Cups. So I'm curious to see how much further that goes with this team. But I would say that his defensive energy, his impact off that second unit, he's been the spark. He's already the 6th man of this team. And he's got a real command of the offense, it seems like, especially when he's in there with the starters. He doesn't look out of place. He doesn't look rushed by the college game at this level. And again, we'll see how that kind of develops and how this storyline kind of is monitored throughout the year when we're talking about more consistent opponents that are, you know, more viable and tournament teams going forward. I think this UConn game this upcoming weekend in New York will be a very good indicator of that as well, kind of to see how he deals with some of the big guys that they're gonna have to play against. So I think Cups brings a lot to this team, and it's his contributions have certainly been welcomed, given the fact that it's not been a very consistent output across the entire team. You see one guy kind of step up here, one guy kind of step up there, but Cups has been instant impact both times he's come into the game so far. So I think he's carving out a real role for this team. His minutes may vary based on matchup or based on, you know, competition or however things go. But I think he's making it hard to keep him off the floor on that bench unit.
Yeah, kind of on top of the big 3-point shots that he hit the first couple of games. I think he just has that sense of calmness that a lot of other freshmen don't have, that it's just rare to be able to develop so quickly at the college level. And it's really something that you can't even work on, really. It's just something that Cups has been able to build. I want to talk about two guys that are kind of the opposite in terms of not getting as much as expected through the first couple of games. It's early, but But Caleb Banks and especially CJ Gunn, are, I think, are two guys Indiana fans expected more. What do you, how do you fix those?
Yeah, those were a couple of guys I keyed in on this offseason, kind of these guys that Woodson has talked about needing a lot more from this year in order to kind of solidify their depth. And then also there's going to be some open spots and higher rotation spots going forward beyond this year. And Indiana's going to need to see a foundation this year, really. They kind of set a base layer last year, but Indiana's looking for guys like Gunn and Banks to kind of build off that foundation from last year and really start to build some positive momentum. Gunn and Banks have been pretty largely inconsistent this year so far. And I think they're, like you mentioned, there are a couple of guys that Indiana fans are really kind of turning to and hoping for. They want to support these guys, but they're not getting what they want out of them yet this year. I'm looking on KenPom, and when you look at the usage rates of these guys, Gunn and Banks are the two lowest guys in Indiana's listing of roster right now when it comes to offensive rating, and outside of Mbaku, whose offensive rating has been quite poor throughout the first couple of games. But I think you could probably attribute part of that to a freshman still trying to get his feet wet in the game and still trying to get comfortable in Indiana's system. But given the fact that Gunn and Banks were here last year, they're two of the returners into this year's team on a squad full of new faces, to not get the kind of impact and continuity that maybe you were looking for from them, I think is a bit concerning, especially going forward into some of these more marquee matchups in non-conference, and then opponents who have seen you once or twice before already last year that already have an idea of how to defend you. If they're not going to kind of take a step that Indiana really needs them to take, then that's going to limit the ceiling, I think, of this Indiana team.
I think confidence plays a factor there too. And just two guys who, you know, playing time last year was up and down, obviously a lot of guys ahead of them. And then this year there are some new guys who are very talented. So, you know, it can be tougher for them to get as consistent playing time as they would have liked. And a lot of times that can just mess with guys' confidence.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM Sportsbook for this college basketball season. We're going to be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks and predictions throughout the college basketball season. And we are going to have special offers for you, the listeners, and the viewers on the Field of 68 each and every week during the season. If you haven't signed up with BetMGM yet, use the bonus code FIELD1500 and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager on BetMGM Sportsbook. Here's what you got to do. Download the BetMGM app. Sign up using the bonus code FIELD1500. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if that bet loses. Just make sure you use the bonus code FIELD1500 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available under one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient for me when I have to go cover games in New York or Philly. When crossing state borders, just log into your existing account instead of having to create new accounts in each state that you go to. And most importantly, I got to let you know, we do have some fun stuff coming up for this college basketball season. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boosts, my personal favorite, parlay odds boosts. So download the BetMGM app today.
As we look forward, the other Wright State game, as we're recording it tonight, of course, we are terrible at timing these kinds of things in podcasts. So this will come out sometime after that Wright State game. So we don't know the result right now, but when this is out, we'll know the result. You're telling me you just did a preview on Wright State and you know a lot about them so far. And honestly, what could be a trap game for Indiana?
Yeah, they've got you look at a team like Wright State that's in the Horizon League, and you see that they're sub 150 on KenPom coming in, and you've got your eyes could be set towards New York this weekend already if you're an Indiana fan, or if you're an Indiana player, and there's a lot of talent on this Wright State team that could give teams challenges. You talk about a guy like Trey Calvin, who is the preseason pick to be the Horizon League Player of the Year, was a first-team selection last year. He's a fifth-year guard. He's been around college basketball a lot. That's the theme with this team. They have so much Division I experience at this level, and this group has been together a lot. A guy like Tanner Holden, who transferred to Ohio State and played there last year, played in 27 games for the Buckeyes, and is back with Wright State this year after spending his first 3 years he and Calvin in that backcourt have really kind of made things work in the Wright State offense, excuse me. And then they have the league's reigning freshman of the year, who's actually, I believe, if his Wright State bio page is correct, entering his fourth year of college basketball because of two redshirt years. So you could be talking about a 22-year-old redshirt sophomore here with the COVID eligibility and injury eligibility, all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of talent on this team. I think Indiana's going to have maybe not their hands full, but we've seen Indiana kind of struggle in these first two contests with a couple of teams, especially in the Army contest, where they were heavily favored. And they just never really pulled away, never emphasized themselves as the better team until late on in the contest. So I think it's a big opportunity for Indiana to kind of lay the groundwork and really get a leapfrog jump start into the weekend with some positive momentum if they come out and play well. But we've not seen them do that so far this year. And Wright State's a team that could capitalize on that if Indiana isn't careful.
Again, we're filming this before that game. Maybe we make some predictions, one with Indiana winning and one with Wright State winning, and we edit it to whichever one actually happens when this one actually comes out.
But yeah, a little bit of TV magic, right? We can't be wrong.
Exactly. After Wright State, not a huge break before you head to the Big Apple. You play the Empire Classic, and no other way to put it, they're the reigning champions in the UConn Huskies, a team that is the reigning champions and a big reason they're ranked top five to start the season. But they don't return a ton. It is more of a reloading kind of year for Dan Hurley and co. And a team that's really deep and could give Indiana a lot of problems. What's your first impression on this UConn team?
I love the way that Dan Hurley coaches this team. I feel like he's got a ton of energy, a ton of momentum with this program. And like you said, to be able to reload the way that they have this year, they still have a number of key guys that are going to give teams like Indiana and teams all across the country issues all year long. But this is by far the steepest test that Indiana has in this early season slate. And it could be one of the best teams outside of a Purdue or a Michigan State that they play all year long. So to be able to get this opportunity early on in the season, I think is a great barometer for Indiana. It's a great litmus test to kind of fully understand, okay, you're playing the national champion. Here's where you stack up right now. Yes, you've got some talent, but a team like UConn is going to expose a lot of flaws that a team like Army or Wright State, with all due respect, will not, because they will have the talent to be able to really expose the things that maybe some of these other teams won't. So you look at a guy like Donovan Klingon, who is, you know, 7'2" and will be the tallest guy on the floor in Indiana. It's going to be one of the few times this year outside of Edie again, where Edie and Purdue again, where, you know, Indiana's not going to have the tallest guy on the floor, not going to maybe have the best player on the floor in a guy like Khalil Ware or a guy like Xavier Johnson, something like that. But specifically with this UConn team, you look at it, you see why they're a top five team, right? They play the game with so much efficiency and they're so powerful. They've looked fantastic through their first three games. Now, granted, all sub 200 KenPom teams, but they've made them look like sub 200 KenPom teams. They've had no issues throughout their first little stretch of the season here. So definitely a tall task for Indiana.
You got to go through the mode of transitive property. I know it's a lot, but still, you know, Stonehill, a team that beat Army by 12 or 13, and that Army team is a team that Indiana had a close one with. UConn beat them by about 40, blew the doors off them. So
they did.
Like you said, they haven't played any great competition yet, but they have just showed why they are a top 10 team and why those teams are sub 300 KenPom teams. You look at it matchup to matchup. Now, UConn only returns two starters. Mm-hmm. Take that with a grain of salt. One of their non-starters they're returning is Donovan Klingon, who's expected by some to be an All-American this season just because he was behind Adama Sanogo, who was one of the best players in college basketball last year. You start at the guard position. UConn's got a couple of guys, but they return Tristan Newton, who was one of the kind of role player starting guards, someone who could knock down a three and handle the ball a little bit for that UConn team. How do you see Xavier Johnson and then off the bench, maybe Gabe Cupps matching up with him?
I think the theme here is going to be that Indiana's going to have their hands full with a lot of these guys. This is another guy where he's been around the college game a lot. You look at his offensive rating here on KenPom. Tristan Newton's offensive rating by himself is 128.4. He's taking 25.8% of the possessions, only about 20% of the shots, but he is incredibly efficient, about a 65% effective field goal shooter, and true shooting wise up near 73%. So he is among the elites when it comes to effective and efficient offense. So Indiana, you know, this backcourt prides itself, I think, on its defense first, and obviously under Mike Woodson, that's kind of been the identity of their teams, which is why I think it's a little bit concerning that the issues they've had in defending a three and defending off of straight line drives, that kind of stuff. And we can get into that later if you want, but I think primarily Indiana's going to have their hands full with a team that's been together a lot and has a championship pedigree to it now. But yeah, so Newton, a guy like Cam Spencer was at Rutgers last year. These guys in this backcourt for UConn are going to be a lot to handle for Indiana. And that's before we get into the front court matchup as well. But yeah, certainly a massive test for Xavier Johnson, even a guy like Trey Galloway, who I know we haven't talked about a lot yet, but that's somebody who I think personally should maybe shoulder a little bit more of the load going forward. He's shown the ability to be able to do that both defensively and offensively when he's aggressive with his decision-making and his shot-taking. But I think Indiana is going to look for more out of him as well. So they've kind of found it when they have that three-guard lineup out there on the floor with Cups and Johnson and Galloway all being on the floor at the same time. But yeah, this UConn team up in top to bottom is, again, you go back and you see why they're a top five team. You see why they dismantle teams. And a part of that is that backcourt.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The backcourt battle's an interesting one to me because these are two teams that don't return a ton of minutes at the college level, at least with their respective programs. Mm-hmm. But the backcourt, you see it a little bit with Tristan Newton and then Xavier Johnson and Trey Galloway on the other side. You have experienced guards, which is going to overall set the tone for this game, I think. But down low could end up being a real issue for Indiana. And how could Khalil Ware and Malik Renu handle Donovan Clingan?
There again, it's going to be a tall task because not a whole lot of people throughout the entire year are going to be able to handle a guy like Donovan Clingan. You look back to, and I know that this is a different Indiana team this year than the one that played last year by a lot of measures, but I go back to the contest in Vegas last year against Arizona when you've got Tubelis and I'm blanking on the other.
Omar Balu.
Yes. Yes. You look at the duo of bigs that Arizona presented to Indiana, and they were just so unique. And Woodson talked about how much trouble that even a guy like Trace Jackson Davis and Malik Renu both had trouble dealing with. And obviously Race Thompson's playing on that team. There's a lot that goes into that game versus this year's. But when you look at kind of the way Indiana matches up against a team that has a primary dominant big like UConn does in Donovan Clingan, I think you're going to find out a lot about what you really have in Khalil Ware and how far forward Malik Renu can really go. I think he's another guy too that if he's able to take a leap, Indiana's ceiling rises massively this year. But we've seen, I think his numbers are a little bit misleading. He's offensively been pretty productive, but he still has some trouble with fouls. It's not nearly as bad as it was last year. I think he averaged over six fouls, either over five or six fouls per 40 minutes last year on the floor. So he's going to be a load to handle. I mean, and they're going to go to him a lot. He takes 38% of the shots, looking at his KenPom numbers here. His usage rate is up over 33%. He's a menace on offensive glass. He takes in one out of every five offensive rebounds. And that's one thing now that, again, that could be inflated based on who they've been playing so far. But if I tell you Donovan Clingan is a great offensive and defensive rebounder, that's a true statement based on whoever they're playing, not based on whoever they're playing. So, he's incredibly efficient. Indiana's defense is going to have a lot of trouble, I think, dealing with him. But if they are able to limit him, and with the backcourt experience you mentioned, Indiana has a ton of backcourt experience in Galloway and Johnson. I think that's 10 years at the college basketball level between those two. And then having a guy like Cups being able to kind of be the spark off the bench for there. If Indiana can limit Clingan a little bit and just slow him, you're not going to take him away, right? But if you can just slow him a little bit and kind of give yourself something to stand off of, down on the low blocks. And I think that changes the entire dynamic of this team and of this game.
I'm intrigued to see what Indiana does matchup wise, because Alex Caravan, who is the one guy in the starting lineup for UConn we haven't really talked about, was kind of a matchup nightmare. Now he's a 6'8", listed as a forward, but he can handle the ball a little bit and he can shoot the lights out. That's what he's there to do. He shot 40% from three on the second most 3-point attempts on the team last season, off to a 39% from three start in the first few games for UConn. And he's a matchup nightmare because he can defend down low when he needs to be there for, but he can stretch the floor offensively, and that can make it tough with Malik Renew is going to have to guard him.
Yeah, I would look at him. I think that's where if you were seeing more from McKenzie and Bacco right now from an Indiana perspective, you would probably feel a lot better about that matchup, given the fact that Mbako is kind of the same build, where he's 6'7", big burly guy, and is able to kind of defend one through four when he's at his best. But Indiana's not getting enough out of him on either side of the ball to really feel comfortable enough to have that kind of contribution and be able to limit a guy like Caravan, who, like you mentioned, he can get lost in the shuffle of this team. But if I'm eyeballing this correct, yeah, he's got the highest offensive rating of any individual on this team. He's up above 150, 154 right now. So, and you're looking at a 78% true shooter, 75% effective field goal percentage. And like you mentioned, he can shoot the lights out. He's barely missed this year. And I think Indiana is going to have their hands full with a guy like him, because there's so many guys on this UConn team that can roll, right? And it feels like Indiana is going to need to play more of a complete game. More Indiana would have to play much better than UConn would to be able to come out with a victory, if you know what I mean. Like, Indiana is going to have to play much more to their potential of a perfect game than UConn would to win this game. So if UConn isn't getting what they want from Spencer or Newton, or maybe they're not getting what they want from Clingan, if a guy like Caravan for UConn just goes unnoticed by the Indiana defense, or they aren't able to contain him, he's a guy that's a game changer in his own right. So that's more of a testament to Hurley and the roster that he's been able to build with this team. But it's also a testament to Caravan and the offensive skill that he has, and kind of the versatility that he has on both ends. So Indiana is going to have their hands full with him too.
It's a team that can shoot the lights out, not only at Caribbean, but almost every position. You know, Clay is that much of a shooter, but all other four positions are guys who can shoot, and Indiana struggled with that perimeter defense. With that being said, just some official predictions. First, let's get that score prediction for the Sunday game against UConn.
I think Indiana is probably... I think the best way I've been able to describe it so far is they've been really flirting with danger. They've not been putting away teams. And you look at a UConn team that already presents danger in itself. I think there's almost an element to this team where they almost need to get, kind of dismantled in a way, not in the, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but UConn is going to be the better team on the floor in this game on paper. And until Indiana really maybe gets a wake-up call, like playing a UConn team that can emphasize their dominance over a lot of different teams, Indiana might not necessarily have the kind of positive change that they're going to need going forward. So I would say this is probably going to shape up around a double digit 15 to 20 point victory for UConn going forward. I think having to go out and play in MSG early, and maybe that's a little bit harsh on Indiana right there, but I think having to go out and play on the East Coast, that's going to be a pseudo home game for UConn in MSG. You know, there's so much continuity and so much talent on that UConn roster, and we still aren't really aware of what Indiana is this year. They've looked abysmal at times, and they've looked really good at times. They've shown flashes of both. So they need to kind of find some layer of consistency. But if I had to put a number on it right now, maybe an 85-70 or something like an 82-63, something like that, where Indiana just kind of is a step or two behind and maybe are shown that on the floor right now.
Yeah, UConn's a team that likes to go on runs, and they showed that a lot last year, not even within games, but just as a whole. They had some rough stretches last year, but when they were really playing at the best, they were the best team in the country. They won the national championship. And
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
They didn't lose a whole lot when they were at their best. And I think it's a UConn team really that had those three pump up tests against lesser opponents and have looked flawless in those. So I think it's a UConn win as well. I'm going to go 13, 15 points, kind of the range you were at. I think. There are points where Indiana will be able to score a lot, just because I think there are points where Khalil Ware and Malik Renu get hot down low. And like I said, Klingon's a force defensively, but then Caravan can sometimes be softer on the defensive end when they get down low. So I think a two big matchup, while it might hurt Indiana defensively, offensively, it can be sort of intimidating. It can be tough. So I think it's if I had to put a number, I'll go UConn 79-64. I think it's somewhat lower scoring, especially to what we've seen this season. The last question about this matchup I was going to ask you is, you look at the matchups, who do you see having a big game due to the matchup against UConn for Indiana?
I think this is a game where somebody like Xavier Johnson would really step up. Somebody who has been around college basketball a ton. He's a sixth-year guy, but he's still one of the quickest guards in the conference. And a big stage like this against a very good team in UConn, he's a captain of this Indiana team. He's a leader. I could see him kind of taking the onus on his shoulders to maybe will Indiana through some of these lulls, some of these points. I would also look at a guy like Khalil Ware, who could see this as kind of his breaking out point to maybe a few people that haven't been watching Indiana so far this year to, you know, kind of put away some of those doubts of his motor. I think we've seen early on this year, and again, it's early. You're talking about two contests so far, but he's really got rolling in the second half, and that's partially because of Indiana's first unit not looking entirely cohesive at all in the first stretch of games. But I think a guy like him could find some offensive leeway against even guys like Klingon. But I think if I had to pick a guy to click here, I would take Xavier Johnson, just based off of the stage that's going to be MSG, national television, a lot of eyes on you. It's a big opportunity for him as well. So I would look at a guy like Xavier Johnson in this matchup.
I think this is a game where Mackenzie Mbako breaks out a little bit, and it doesn't have to be some crazy 20-point game, but I think he looks more comfortable in this game because I think he can beat UConn with his athleticism. It's a UConn team that extremely skilled, basketball wise and has a really good fundamentals, but athletically they're not one of the most athletic teams in the country. So I think Mackenzie Ibaka can take advantage of that a little bit. So I think he looks more comfortable. And while Indiana loses, that's a good sign for Indiana fans, is him moving forward. Before we end.
One sec. I wanted to add something on Ibaka. I think some of the best offensive sets Indiana has run so far this year has been when the goal is to get Ibaka off of the screen in a catch and shoot position, where whether it's on the perimeter or in the mid range, he's a great spot up shooter, catch and shoot guy. So he's not necessarily a guy that's always going to create with the ball in his own hands. So whether it's off of a dribble drive or a driving kick, something along those lines, or Indiana is able to cohesively put together multiple possessions in a row, where they're finding a guy like Ibaka off of a pass and assisting into a made field goal. I think that's where Indiana's offense can be at its best, when it's not running through Malik Renu and Khalil Ware. Getting a guy like Ibaka some shots in rhythm, you know what I mean? I think that could be really proficient for Indiana's offense going forward as well.
Yeah, he doesn't have a ton of shot attempts so far, and I think that's one of the things that Indiana gets him more. As other guys, you said, he kind of takes away a lot of attention. Well, it's going to kind of work the opposite way now. If he's not doing much, there's going to be less attention on him, and that can sort of help him to break out.
Yeah.
The Empire Classic, though, is two games. You know, we don't know who Indiana will play. Depends on the result of Texas-Louisville. I just wanted to ask you before we end, anything matchup-wise you like about the Texas or Louisville teams against Indiana?
Well, I think I don't think it's necessarily disrespectful, more just honest to say that Louisville is the worst of the four teams in this matchup, or in this kind of grouping in MSG. We've seen so many issues with kind of the way that they've got off to game, the way that they've started games. They finally won a game like comfortably over the 360th team in KenPom, and I believe there's only 362 teams in Division I college basketball this year. So I think obviously it's not shocking the world here to say that Texas is probably going to have their way with Louisville here a little bit. That's at least what I would think. But I think that there's probably some ways, and again, I haven't had time necessarily to look too far into those matchups yet, but I think that there's definitely a few things that Indiana could take advantage of. And I think as long as, because I think we both said a loss to UConn probably feels more evident right now. I would say that as long as Indiana comes out of the weekend with a split, or at least if it ends up being by some way Texas, or if it is Louisville, I would say that they would absolutely have to split. But if it's Texas, even if you don't win that game, because that's a top 25 team, like that's, you need to have something out of this weekend going into Thanksgiving break, where you feel good about it, because you've got Big Ten conference play starting up in December, and then you've got games against Auburn and Kansas, and then you've got like three tune-ups before going right back into that gauntlet. So this weekend is crucial, and I think it's why there needs to be emphasis put on the UConn game on Sunday. Obviously, you want to come out, you want to play, you want to win, but really you need to show something in that second game on Monday, on the second half of a back-to-back, the quick turnaround that really suggests that you're building forward and have some positive momentum in the right direction. So I think that's where Indiana needs to kind of divert their focus if things go the way that we're anticipating them to go on Saturday or on Sunday, excuse me.
Yeah, if Indiana finds their way some, in whatever way, into a Texas matchup, whether that's a UConn loss or a Texas loss, it's Texas is a team that's very much like UConn, where they're not the most athletic team in the world, but they have so much talent across the roster. And you look at Max Asemus and the amount of shooters this Texas team has.
Yeah, Tyrese Hunter as well. Yeah. Like there's just a ton of talent on that team up and down.
So they find their way into that matchup. It's kind of just another UConn test, just maybe not as talented as a UConn team, but it's pretty close. I'll say this, though. I think what a Louisville win could do is add a ton of confidence. A Louisville team is not, you know, the season's not going the way they want. The ranking's not going to be as high, but it's a brand name. It's a program brand name like Louisville, and a team that has a lot of talent. They've had some solid recruiting classes. Whether you want to blame it on coaching or chemistry or whatever it is for their struggles, either way, you're beating a team that's a brand name and has a lot of talent. So I think an Indiana win over Louisville could be big. I think that's going to wrap it up for our predictions and preview of the Empire Classic. Mason, I know you're going to be there over the weekend and into Thanksgiving break, so have a ton of fun with that in the Big Apple. Don't party too hard with all the other media students there. But thanks for coming out.
Hey man, it's a work trip first, but always I appreciate the opportunity again to pinch hit for Austin, and yeah, this was fun. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for tuning in to another special edition of House of Hoosier. We'll be back next week.